Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLachlan. Jay McLachlan is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLachlan and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLachlan stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLachlan's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLachlan's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern, and the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLachlan, and so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLachlan is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20, capital ZIBBY20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital ZIBBY20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white open long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLachlan. Thanks so much.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, the creator and host of the award-winning podcast that you're listening to right now. Thank you so much, called Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. It is a daily podcast, 365 days a year, and each day we talk to an author about all of the things related to their career, their book, their life, and more in 30 minutes or less, because who has time? I am now an author myself, although I wasn't when I started this podcast, and you can get my new memoir, Bookends, a memoir of love, loss, and literature, wherever books are sold starting July 1st, and my children's book, Princess Charming. You can learn more about me at ZibbyOwens.com, but really, you're here to learn more about the authors, and that is what we're going to do. Also, be sure to check out all the other podcasts in the Zcast Podcast Network. You can learn more at ZCastNetwork.com and definitely check out those shows as well. I hope you'll all check out the all-new Zibby Mag, ZIBBYMAG, the literary lifestyle destination with essays, book news, a lit lifestyle feature, and even some classes. Check it out, ZibbyMag.com. Emily Giffen is the author of Meant to Be, a novel. This is the second time Emily has come on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. She is a graduate of Wake Forest University and the University of Virginia School of Law, the number one New York Times bestselling author of many novels, including Something Borrowed, Something Blue, Baby Proof, Love the One You're With, Heart of the Matter, Where We Belong, The One and Only, First Comes Love, All We Ever Wanted, The Lies That Bind, and now Meant to Be. She currently lives in Atlanta with her husband and three children. And Emily was so nice and invited me to be the moderator at her launch event downtown for Meant to Be, and I had the best time and am so grateful because it was really, really fun. Welcome, Emily. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss Meant to Be.
Thank you, Zibby, for having me. I'm so excited to see you again.
You too.
I started out my book tour with you on June 2nd in New York City, and this is one of my last podcasts here at the conclusion of the tour, so it feels fitting. It's great to see you, and congratulations on Bookends, the launch of Bookends.
Thank you so much.
Such a fabulous job. I'm seeing it everywhere, and it's such a beautiful book.
Thank you.
And that's when we discovered, you know, I think how much, because when you read The Lies That Bind, which was had 9/11 as a theme, when we sort of discovered how much we had in common living in New York at the same time and experiencing 9/11 as New Yorkers. And yeah, that was when we bonded 2 years
That's
ago.
Right. That's right. I know. It's nice. Well, first of all, it's nice to see you on both ends of your book tour. But yes, I mean, that's why I responded so much to your last book. I mean, I love this book as well. Like, I love how you write, but there was that, you know, I mean, I know the whole world sort of went through 9/11, but
sure. Yeah.
When you have a personal experience or whatever, and you wrote about it so beautifully. And
when you have a friend, you know, when you lose a friend and we're so close to it, it's definitely like, yeah, it's a shared experience, awful though it is. It's, you know, I think it also brings people together as tragedies have a way of doing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but we won't talk about
that. We don't have to go there. Okay. Meant to Be. Mm-hmm. Very different than the last book. We had such a great conversation. I was just saying this to you. I wish I had like recorded it or something.
I know.
I brought all my kids to your lounge. It was the most fun ever. We'd never been down to that whole area before. And like there were women just like flocking all in hot pink, like waiting for you. It was so exciting to see so many like energized, excited, passionate fans of yours getting together, which was awesome.
It was really special. And your kids and husband being there, my son being there was really fun. I think there's a lot of, you know, people are just so excited to be back in person, you know, knock on wood, it just feels like another, you know, wave is coming here, it just was really nice to see everyone and chat with you about the book. And you're right. It's different. This Meant to Be is different than my last book and really different than the 10 that came before it. So this is my 11th novel, but this is the first time that I sort of drew on, you know, a real life historical event. It's not historical fiction, but it's inspired by John F. Kennedy Jr. and his beautiful bride, Carolyn Bessette. And, you know, their sort of tragic story inspired me to write this book. So it's not based on them. It's entirely fictional characters. Joe Kingsley and Kate Cooper in the book are their own people with their own unique backstories. But it's definitely rooted in that historical, you know, background and my love of the Kennedy family, which we talked about a lot that night. But did you grow up interested in the Kennedys? Did either of your parents foist that upon you?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if they foisted it, but sure. I mean, how could you not be sort of totally captivated by the glamour and especially the two of them? I mean, I wasn't like obsessed perhaps like you, but you know, I feel like I was more, if you're going to go in the like obsession world, mm-hmm. I feel like I was more obsessed with like Princess Diana from a young age, right? Like,
I was her too. I mean, I think she growing up, it was just all about the history and the politics and the family. And, you know, really, you know, she would tell me about, you know, where she was when Kennedy was assassinated. And, you know, she was watching her soap opera that was interrupted by Walter Cronkite, you know, with three separate news bulletins, like the president's been shot and, you know, the president, you know, and then of course the president's died. So she, you know, I was sort of aware of all of the heavy backstory, the Kennedy curse, like all the things that had happened. And then, you know, fast forward to the mid-90s when I was graduating from law school at Virginia, which of course is like a school where a lot of the Kennedys, you know, Kennedys went to law school, which was not lost on me when I made that decision. You know, graduated, moved to New York City to work at a big firm. And this was during George Magazine and when John was, I think he had just broken up with Daryl Hannah and everyone wanted to know who he was dating. And then he strikes up this relationship with this like mystery blonde that no one really knew anything about. She was in fashion, worked in Calvin Klein. So I was, you know, fascinated by them as a couple and I don't consider myself like a huge follower of like tabloids, but in the mid 90s, it was like, you know, that was they were the it couple.
Yeah.
And I think part of what that was about was the family had been through so much tragedy that we all sort of pinned a lot of hopes of a happily ever after on this little boy who lost his father when he was just 3 years old. He was saluting that casket with his, you know, his mother draped in black, the black veil, and, you know, having to leave the White House very abruptly and raise her children alone in New York City. I mean, there was just so much hope pinned to this bright, you know, the brown eyed, like infectious charm, like this boy that was growing up in New York City. And we just wanted all the best for him. And then, of course, he blossomed into the hottest man I mean, I've ever seen. I mean, I think a lot of people universally consider him the gold standard of beautiful men. And so we just wanted him to be happy. Of course, that didn't happen. And his story ended just as tragically. But I remember being in the Hamptons, and I write about this in my author's note at the end of the book, being there, waking up in a crowded Hampton share in the basement with, you know, people sleeping everywhere as you do in your 20s when you can't afford nicer accommodations. And the TV was on and just like, okay, there's a plane crash. Like, who is it? I thought it was a senator. I thought it was a congressman. I was trying to figure out. And then I hear it's John and Carolyn and Carolyn's sister, Lauren. And it was just, and they were flying, of course, to Rory Kennedy's wedding, his cousin. And it was so surreal and shocking and awful. But I kept thinking, surely he's going to emerge from the surf with his like little, you know, grin and like, there was a crazy story, but I landed the plane. And, you know, we all know that didn't happen, but I think the seeds were planted around that time. I was practicing law and not yet I shouldn't say I wasn't a writer because I've always been a writer, but I'm not a published writer. But I think the seeds were planted then of like this, what if, like, you know, and I think that fuels a lot of my fiction. And I think fiction generally, these, you know, you take a situation and then you sort of wonder like, you know, what if, and that definitely happened with this book. And I think it was a long time in the coming to write this like fictional account of these, you know, of this iconic mid-90s couple. And it was a lot of fun to go back and revisit that time. You know, you were in the city, you know what that was like pre 9/11. And I think sometimes we become overly nostalgic about decades past and gone by, and we see, you know, it's like rose-colored glasses, and you only remember, you know, you don't remember the fact that, you know, Monica Lewinsky was completely demonized in a situation that now she would be like the Me Too victim, and, you know, as it should be. And so a lot of things have changed for the better, but for purposes of this novel, it was really about, you know, revisiting that sort of golden feel of a simpler time. It's dangerous to call it like a simpler time, but you know what I mean? Just, you know, New York City and Tribeca and this couple. And I planted a lot of like places where John and Carolyn actually hung out. And so it was fun to revisit my 20s and single years and New York City as it was then. So,
well, I feel like, and you probably have heard this before, especially as you're going about talking about this book, but you don't look that different from like you are the Carolyn Bessette Kennedy sort of, you have that same look. No, seriously. I mean, you could
tell. Well, okay. I'll say this. First of all, I'm glad that this is audio and not, because everyone would be like, what is she talking about? But I think that I have heard that a lot, a lot, which is always surprising to me because she's so glamorous and I'm so decidedly not. But I think facial feature wise, we do have like the longer nose and the fuller lips and the longer, you know, longer face. Like there are definitely some facial similarities. But body, no, not at all. I have short legs. She had long legs. And then, of course, just the inherent glam, I mean, like this open book, you know, no glamour at all. And she was just this mystery icon. So I think the similarities stop with just some facial features. But thank you. I always take it as the highest of compliments. So thank you for that.
Well, also, I mean, I think that was part of the allure of her is I feel like nobody really knows what she was totally like, mm-hmm. you know, like, 'cause she was so private. And right. who knows, maybe you two have more in common than you think, yeah. But she well, just you know, like, kept it under wraps.
I think part of what is so captivating about them is, well, you know, and that's why I chose to set the book back in the 90s, because this story, of course, you know, it would work in any, you know, you could set it at any time. You could send it, could have easily set it in the present. But there's something about the 90s, and which was kind of the last moment in time where, you know, I guess a little longer into the early 2000s, but where there wasn't this like explosion of social media, and there celebrities weren't so accessible. There was still mystery around them. You know, it wasn't just everyone, you know, on Instagram and Twitter and everything else, just showing what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. And I love that accessibility. And I think it's brought us all closer in a lot of ways, for better or worse. I think it's sort of undermined the allure of celebrity in some ways, because that mystery has sort of, you know, evaporated in many ways. And I wonder what she was so private by any account of her inner circle, which we do have, you know, people from her inner circle who have shared and enlightened us about what she was really like and what she felt. And it's sort of very consistent that she hated the attention. And, you know, I wonder, would she have had an Instagram? I don't think she would. I just don't. But, you know, if he had entered into the world of politics, she would have had to become more public. You know, who knows? Again, it's that what if. It's that wondering what if, what would it have been like? But I also think that one of the things about her, one thing that she does share with Kate Cooper in the book, or I should say Kate Cooper shares with her, is this concept of being in love with John and Joe in the book, in spite of their fame and not because of it. And I think that feels rare, you know, in this fame-obsessed, celebrity-obsessed culture. I mean, maybe that's not fair. Maybe we're sort of projecting that on to people, but it seems like a lot of celebrities are dating other celebrities to sort of increase their clout, or like that's what they're accused of doing. You know, like, is this, I mean, you hear it with J-Lo and I guess she's a Jaff now, right? She's changed her name, but you hear it with those two. It's like, is this a ploy? Is this a stunt? You know, are they just trying to get more famous? I don't think it is. I think it's true love, but I'm like a sucker for that.
Thank you, by the way, for posting. I read about the whole Ben Affleck, J-Lo thing on your account and like that whole thing. And then I was like, is Emily making this up? Is this like going to be one of her like funny, like, is this like a parody of something, or is this actually a statement? And then I had to like go cross-reference and see if they really had gotten married. And
wasn't it sweet though? I thought it was really like sweet and heartfelt. I mean, I don't know. I'm like that just glass half full, believing in like true love. And I love the fact that it was rekindled 20 years later. Like I have very little cynicism unless it's like beaten into me and I see so much evidence to the contrary. And then I'm like, okay, I'm a cynic too. But yeah, I thought it was sweet. Not to veer off in that direction.
Yeah, I know. Sorry about this. Sorry.
I'm doing it. I'm going to continue to do it here. But did you notice how like young, like her dress was like so young looking, like so like first bride looking that, and then her taking his name, which she's never done before. Like I was wondering, I was talking to a friend last night about it. You can see what I do in my free time. but there's almost this sense of like, I feel like this is what she's like always wanted. And she's going back to her like inner, like, you know, 20-year-old self of like how she thought she would get married and what the world would look like. And I just really hope that that's true for her. Like that's really, that this is really like the real thing. Like this is really like going to stick. I don't know. Yeah. Who knows? It'd be a good book though. It'd be a good fictional book to write about a couple. Not, I probably wouldn't do another famous couple ever again or in no time soon, but this whole concept of being together and then 20 years later, being together again. I mean, you hear about that with like Facebook, you reconnect.
So my babysitter, now we're really getting off topic here, but my babysitter, Carrie, who was my babysitter when I was probably like five or something like that, was our mother's helper for a summer. She went to Skidmore. I thought she was like the coolest thing ever. She had like one of those 1980s straw bags, you know, that everybody used to carry. Anyway, she wouldn't come back the second summer to babysit us unless her boyfriend came. So my mom got him a job at the Palm restaurant out here in East Hampton. And they ended up breaking up, but Fred ended up marrying the daughter of the owner of the Palm and ended up becoming like the head of the Palm restaurants for a while. No. And then we went to Carrie's wedding. She married somebody else. She moved to New Mexico, I think. Fred moved with his wife to Washington, D.C. And they both had three boys. And then they both got divorced, found each other on Facebook after all this time. And now they're married.
I love it. Did you go to the wedding?
I feel like I should write a book about that.
Yeah, you should.
Or they should write a book about that. Did I go to their wedding? No, it was just like their family and whatever. But yeah, now they have like six boys between them.
I love that. But there's so many stories. I mean, relationships are so complicated and messy and they take such turns and twists. And it's like, there's just, that's what I love to write about, and just how complicated we are and how we get things wrong and we screw up and we mess up. And it's, you know, stories about forgiveness and redemption. And, you know, you see these themes in Meant to Be, and you really see them, I think, throughout all my books, because I think that's life. That's relationships. That's, you know, who we are. So yeah, it's been special to hear how readers have connected with these two characters who, you know, are so different than, you know, a lot of the readers, but there's universal themes there of how we feel about ourselves. And
ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row, dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it, and that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
So, Emily, like 11 novels. I mean, how do you keep coming up with new? I mean, I know What If is like a big through line, right? And all this fascination and whatever, but how do you keep doing it? How do you not worry that, like, what if the next one is not as good as the last one? Or like, how do you keep So you have to keep reinventing yourself as an author in a way, right?
That's the big what if, right? What
right?
if?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, for sure. I mean, you know, it's time to gear up and write the next book. And I have like, you know, I have my idea and but it's scary. It's scary every time, which is really sort of a metaphor for life, right? I mean, it's like we constantly, you know, have to sort of approach the next new chapter. I mean, my boys are leaving for college. So I'm going to be seeing more of you in New York because they're going to Columbia. So
oh, amazing. We'll hang out.
Libby, the Zimster, if I call you right here. Yeah. So it's like, it's scary. It's daunting. Like what's it going to be like with one child left at home and two gone and, you know, we're moving. And so it's right. Starting a book is in many ways like little mini chapters of our own lives when we have to sort of, start over with where we are and reinvent ourselves at times whether it's our careers. You saw a lot of that in the pandemic with people's relationships and jobs. And so, yeah, but I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm not scared every time, because I definitely am. I'm also a worrier. Like, just innate anxiety like fuels me. And I think it's in some ways it's my greatest curse. And in some ways it's my greatest gift, because it really propels me to, I'm a perfectionist, and it just like, you know, I want to get it right. I want to write the next book that people love. I never want to write a book that I always want people out there to say, this is my favorite of your books. Like, not everyone, but at least, you know, at least this a subset of my readers, like, no, this one spoke to me the most. So are you a worrier, Zibby?
I am a total worrier. And I was about to say that this is my theory about writers in general, that like we all share an anxiety disorder. Like, I think 90% of authors, or some really high percentage. And I think that's why whenever I talked, like, there's this like shorthand. I mean, if you're always worrying, what if, what if, what if, which is what I think about everything, right? I always go to like the worst, right? the worst of whatever scenario I'm in, like, and I play that whole thing out. And then if it doesn't unfold that way, I'm like relieved. But I'm like, if you can turn that into writing, which so many people do, I feel like it's a funnel for that. So that's why I feel like so many, if you are out there worrying, you should just write a book.
Yeah, just write a book. And motherhood doesn't help that much. I think that really amped up because the stakes are so high. You know, before I had kids in my 20s in New York, it's like, okay, don't lose this wallet in a New York City cab tonight. Like don't lose. I mean, I lost so many purses and wallets. It wasn't when my dad first read Something Borrowed, my first novel, he called me and he said, no, well, no wonder you lost so many wallets and purses. And like, you were always losing things. And I said, what does that mean? And he goes, all the drinking you were doing. And I'm like, Dad, it's fiction. I'm not Rachel. I also didn't have an affair with my best friend's fiance, like, fiction, Dad. But of course, you're always drawing on things in your own life. And I guess Rachel and I did have that in common, like that sort of absent-mindedness, but
for someone who's wanted to like be an author, right? Like, your career is the dream of so many people, right? You get to just do, you just write forever. You have all these fans, you're best-selling author. Like, how do you still have the drive when you have, is the drive just to top your last book? Like, where does the drive, like, where are you going with this now? Do you know what I mean? Like, what's propelling you?
It's thank you for that characterization. I try to remind myself of that. I mean, we all get so mired in our worries and our deadlines and everything else, but I always try to back up and say, like, you're not, you know, I'm not a lawyer anymore, which I did not enjoy. Like, I get to do what I love. And that's a really good reminder, and just in general about gratitude in all of our lives. But I, you know, really, and it sounds sort of like cheesy, but it's really true. Like, I'm most motivated by wanting my readers to be happy, because I do feel such a close relationship with them. You know, the in-person interaction. I mean, you saw the event. Like, it's, you know, it's something that I enjoy. I think some writers don't and some do, and you really can't fake it, but it's something that I love, and I feel a deep connection with my readers. And so I don't want to disappoint them. And there's always like a handful that I'll picture. Like, I don't want them to put down the book and be disappointed. So I think that's what really continues to, you know, my drive to like do my very best with each book. But I think that's also just part of who I am, like the little inner nerd in me, the perfectionist, the the one that didn't want to get B's in college and law school, although I got plenty of them in law school. But yeah, so, but it's been fun. And I do feel very grateful. And I've met great people like you, Zibby. Like I, you know, wouldn't have met you without this career, and just so many fascinating people, especially women. And I feel like we have a great community amongst, you know, women writers and readers and supporters of fiction. And, you know, it's just, I feel very, very lucky. I know you feel the same too.
I feel totally lucky, and I'm delighted to have met you. I feel like this is the greatest thing. It's like you set out to write a book, and like you get this whole community of people who are like the nicest, most supportive group ever. Yeah, it's really, it's like out of this world amazing. It really is.
Have you ever noticed the way men sometimes will say, you know, they'll say, and I don't do male bashing in my fiction or in real life. You know, I love so many men and have great relationships with, you know, my, the males in my life, but they always sort of seem surprised by how much we like lift each other up. You know, it's interesting because, you know, readers of books, the more you love books, the more you're going to read books. So if someone picks up another novel that they love, that's great for our work. Like, you know, memoirs included, you know, it's like, that just makes you want to read more. It's like the worst thing is like a reading drought, you know, like that you don't want the reading droughts to happen with readers. You want them to be like, oh my gosh, I read this great book and now I want to read another great book. So it always surprises me when people sort of, you know, pit female writers against one another and in the way that some do, often men, but my male bashing.
Yeah. No, I'm not even sure it's male, female. I think it's this industry. I mean, women in other industries aren't necessarily as supportive of one another as they are in writing.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, maybe. Maybe because, you know, what I'm saying, it's not a zero-sum game. It's not, you know, there's not just like one book, like, you know, in marketing, like you're picking one, you know, I don't know. I don't even know the lingo of those worlds, but you know, it's not, we all have a ton of books, right? Like it's, you know, the more you read, the more you want to read. And it's a beautiful thing.
And what is your, you do such a great job of cultivating. I know we're almost done, but what's like your secret in cultivating your audience? I know you keep writing books. I know you have such a strong Instagram following and everything, but like if you had advice on authors trying to build their readership and maintaining that sense of community, what's the secret? Yeah.
I mean, I think as with anything, it would be the same thing that I would say about relationship advice or job advice or, you know, authenticity. Like you have to be yourself. Like, you know, you can't look at a formula and say, this is what I should do to gain more followers or to get more readers. Like, you know, I talk about politics in my feed. I post my kids and they're running and I post my dogs. And you know, some people are, you know, not going to be interested in my ducks, my daughter's pet ducks on my Instagram page and, you know, my kids running and, you know, what I have to say about the election in Georgia. But that's, to me, it's like, you're going to find your true people and followers and readers if you just are authentically yourself. And you have to just sort of go with that and not follow the trends of, you know, of fiction or of social media or try to like, you know, analyze too much what's going to garner you the most support and followers and everything else. And you know this already. I mean, I know you're asking the question more generally, but you're very authentic with your you know, social media and your personality and your like, and that's what people want to see. There's too much imitation, right? In the world. And it's just good to see when people are themselves.
True. But I always worry, like, what if Instagram disappears? Where will I find all these people ever again? Do you know what I mean? Like, where am I going to find them? But anyway.
Yeah, didn't we say that about MySpace? And look where we are.
Okay. You're right. Emily, thank you so much. This has been so much fun. I'm sorry we didn't talk that much about the book because I feel like we analyzed it so much and now I'm like selfish. Fabulous book for all Emily Giffen fans and people who are not yet Emily Giffen fans, but should be. But after being a number one New York Times bestselling author, I figure you probably know her already. So anyway, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Zibby, and congratulations again on Bookends.
Thank you. And thank you again for posting about it. That was so sweet. Anyway, all right. Okay. I'll see you in New York then.
See you in New York.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books.
Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.